from One World Trade Center, where we can't figure out a 401k, but we can fill out a fantasy lineup. Welcome to the Golf Digest Fantasy Podcast.
Welcome back to the Golf Digest Fantasy Picks Podcast. I'm Alex Myers, and as always, I am joined by Joel Beal. On tap this week is the Waste Management Open. Of course, this is the one with the stadium hole on the 16th hole, part three. Gets pretty crazy there, Joel. What do you think about that hole? I know you were putting together a list of maybe some other holes that deserve to maybe get that same type of treatment on tour.
Yeah, it's been a remarkable study and implementation, really, for the PGA Tour. It's really not that great. If you take if anyone's ever played TPC Scottsdale, the 17th hole, I think, is a lot more entertaining of a layout. But you really take this, pedestrian par three, put a bunch of stands around it, and more importantly, the rowdiest fans you can find. Mm-hmm. And not only has it become a staple of the tournament, it's become a staple of the tour. And the craziest thing is golf definitely has a stuffiest reputation, a very pretentious reputation. A lot of the guys like it, and a lot of people involved in golf like it. I think it's been a really nice ad. I'm kind of surprised it hasn't really trickled down across other venues. But, yeah, I think most people – obviously you'll have a few people who are detractors, but all in all, most people like it. I think it's good. I wish golf would take more innovative routes to find ways to engage the fans like they have in Phoenix.
Yeah, I think we wonder every year why we don't see more of this at other PGA Tour events. Certainly – this one hole has given, an identity to this event. There's an event basically every week on the PGA Tour throughout the whole year, and so many of them just run together. But this one stands out, and it's because, like you said, it's just a regular par three that they've just put a lot of stands around and let the crowds go crazy. I know the one thing they took away a few years ago was those caddy races. Those were really fun. I guess they were worried about caddy getting hurt or something. That was silly. But other than that, you're right. It seems like people who don't want to deal with this atmosphere simply will not play in this event. And if you do like it, you show up, you have a good time, you play to the crowd. Remember Phil Mickelson throwing footballs around. It's a good time. One of these days, I kind of want to get out there just to experience it for myself. It's a little more rowdy than our usual afternoon foursome, wouldn't you say?
Well, it depends if Steve Hennessy's in our group.
No, good point.
Weekend. But,
yeah, that's a good point.
No, I think you actually hit on a good point. It's not like these guys are required to play yet. If you look at the field, and we'll get to this in a moment, it's a pretty nice field this week.
Definitely.
I guess the only argument for not maybe spreading it more is that this is kind of, if every other tour event does this, maybe the Phoenix Open loses its identity a little bit.
Right.
But you're right. Like, it's such a way to enliven the fan base, and more importantly, to get kind of that novice or even casual golf fan to come to an event.
Yep.
I do think in some fashion you'll see it spread here a little bit in the next couple of years. But, yeah, I think everyone involved will say the 16th hole has been a rousing success.
All right, well, before we talk about the picks for this week's tournament, I want to talk about our fantasy draft first, Joel. It happened last Wednesday. It was a snake draft, a keeper league, and I'm pretty satisfied with how it turned out. I'll just run through it quick. We had the third pick in the draft, and Rory McIlroy, a.k.a. Rory McRib, did fall to us. We snatched him up, although Joel was leaning Dustin Johnson. I pushed him towards Rory, though. We were surprised that Dustin Johnson was available, to be honest. Jason Day went first. Spieth went second. After McIlroy, we got J.B. Holmes in the second round, then Bill Haas, another one of my favorites, as Joel. Joel likes that we're picking guys that I like because if they don't play well, he can just mock me. Then we got
that was my whole reasoning for allowing you to go McIlroy.
I knew it. I knew you had a reason.
I told my fiance it's a win-win. Either Rory McIlroy turns in the season that a lot of guys think, up to 3 weeks ago we thought he'd have, and then he gets injured. Or if he falls, I get to put this in your face that good job, Alex. Good job, Dustin Johnson. So we got guy who started the season already out 5 weeks. So
that's right.
Win-win, really, for me.
It is. It was a good strategy by you. After Bill Haas, we got Jamie Lovemark. Then Brendan Steele was our fifth-round keeper. Then, with the pick of the draft, if I may say so myself, and we actually picked simultaneously, but luckily my pick got in ahead of Joel, we took Ollie Schneiderjohns, who almost won this week at Torrey Pines. As soon as we made that pick, everyone in the league groaned because they knew how brilliant of a pick that was. So we have Ollie Snyder-Johns at the sixth round, then Sean O'Hare, who Joel wanted, so we got him anyway on the wraparound, followed by Chris Wood, Luke Donald, and Matthew Fitzpatrick. Wow, that's a lot of Englishmen there at the end rounding out our lineup. Fitzpatrick was also a keeper. We got to keep him in the 10th round. So that's our team so far. We have a couple more to be added through waivers. Hopefully we'll get Bo Hostler. Hope nobody else is listening in our league to this. But yeah, Joel, what did you think, other than your obviously devilish strategy to, you know, have me pick the guys I like?
Well, you know, that's the main thing. That's my main concern in life is make sure you're happy. So, no, Bill Haas, actually, as much as I like to give you credit for fawning over him, he really had an under-the-radar season last year. And I think he's kind of poised to, you know, be in a top 25 guy again this year. I really like our Brendan Steele keeper as a fifth-round pick. This is a guy who really competed well the first five, 6 weeks of the season. As you mentioned, Ollie is going to be a really – really nice pick. And even guys like Chris Wood and Luke Donald, they might not jump off the page off you, but they're just very consistent performers, especially in the bigger events. And I think it definitely helps that we have Matthew Fitzpatrick as our keeper from last year as well. Yeah, you're right, a lot of international flavor. You know, we're just, despite what's going on in the world, we're two guys who still welcome international flavor in the confines of the country. So,
That's right.
Yeah, overall, I'm sure the rest of our league would counter, but I like how we're shaping up so far.
Yeah,
and keep this in mind when we come back on next week and realize we finished like 11th out of 12th
this
week. But.
Well, right. I mean, again, it's going to be tough early on because we got Rory out for obviously a few weeks, and a lot of those British guys who we're mentioning might not be playing over here as well. So those weeks might be a little lean. We might have to lean on the waiver wire to pick up some extra guys to round out the lineup. But Luke Donald, he made a hole-in-one over the weekend. He bought beers and hot dogs for the guys he was playing with. So, you know, we've got a lot of good vibes. And with that, I will make my first pick for this week's tournament. And now we can all breathe a sigh of relief because last year, I know you've heard us whine about this, but we had Brant Snedeker when he won the Farmers, and it didn't count because the league starts with this week. And this last week, we thought that Ollie Snyder-Johns might win. Who else was up there for us? Brendan Steele was up there for a couple days, and I was worried that, again, we were going to have someone win and it wasn't going to count. But anyway, now it counts. Guys, don't hold back on our team. Go for it. And I'm going to start with one of them, and that's Brendan Steele, who is really playing, without a doubt, the best golf of his career right now. Obviously, he started the season with that win at the Safeway. He's continued the strong play, and he comes to a Phoenix course, TPC Scottsdale, where he had a run of three straight top sixes from 2012 to 2014. So this is a course that he has had some success with. And again, he's just, you know, become one of the more consistent players out there. So, Brendan, let's get us off to a good start this week.
Yeah, I think it would surprise a lot of people that he's ranked fourth right now in the FedEx Cup standings. It's another thing is, you know, I think a lot of people look at last year, Dustin Johnson, they kind of cited his age as one of the reasons was, you know what, this is when a guy peaks. Brendan Steele is right there at that age. He's 33 years old right now. This is historically that, you know, 32 to 35 range is when guys really hit their prime. And again, you look at all the kind of ancillary saber metrics, and Steele's a guy who is really better than he's kind of played, at least in terms of tournament finishes the past 3 or 4 years. So really, this could just be something of he's kind of finally playing to his stats. And yeah, right. I mean, obviously we have him on our team, but I think Steele's a guy. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets another win or two before 2017's wrapped up.
Welcome to the Brendan Steele era. That's all I have to say. Here we go, baby. All right, Joel, who do you like this week?
Well, speaking of era, the guy that really pops out this week for me is Phil Mickelson. This will be his 28th time playing at TPC Scottsdale.
Wow.
I mean, he's basically been playing at the event longer than some of his fellow PGA, you know, tour players have been alive.
Yep.
Not only has he won here three times, but he also owns the 18-hole and 72-hole records. Also has 10 top 10s. And if that's not enough to convince you, he really should have positive signs in return from his hernia injury. He finished 21st at the career builder and 14th at Torrey last week. You know, I was just thinking about this before the podcast started. It's funny. I think 15 years ago, at least personally, I would have guessed Mickelson is the guy who would hang him up at 40 years old to be with the family. And at 46 years old, he's grinding harder than ever. It's really just been a joy to watch.
Yeah, he's playing great. You know, he was kind of in the mix even at Torrey Pines. He stumbled a little on the back nine, finished with a couple birdies. was I think T14. So he's playing well. He was T21, I think, at the Career Builder the week before. So, you know, like you said, coming off that surgery, or those two surgeries, you didn't really know exactly what to expect right away. Didn't even know if he'd be playing yet at this point, and he's playing pretty well. I love Phil, too. I'll stay away just because I'll let you pick him, but I love Phil, too. I fully endorse that pick. Another guy, though, who I don't know how you can't pick him right now, and again, you said it over the weekend. We talk about him every week, it seems, but there's a reason why, and that's John Rahm. You know, it's not like we were really going out on a limb saying this guy was going to be the next big thing, but he is going to be the next big thing, and he proved that with that just sensational rally at Torrey Pines, the two eagles over the last six holes, capped by that 60-foot putt to win his first event. Now he returns to TPC Scottsdale. This is an area where he's very familiar with. He went to school at Arizona State. Phil Mickelson said recently that he dusted him in a, let's say, quote, friendly match, took some money from Phil. So this is a guy who's means business, especially in this area, especially since we'll probably see him rocking that Arizona State jersey like he did a couple years ago, the Rombo jersey, when he finished T5, by the way, when he was still a junior in college. So this guy is serious potential, and we're already seeing it come through.
Yeah, you mentioned it's amazing, really. He's coming to fruition this quickly. But then again, he had two top tens as an amateur on the PGA Tour,
right,
and
right.
Came out of the gates firing after Oakmont last year.
Exactly.
Yeah, Rahm is a guy who I believe I saw him twice last year in person, and it's easy to be awestruck by seeing these guys hit in person, but the real litmus test is how their fellow pros react. And at least at Oakmont, he was one of two or three guys where other pros would kind of come over and just watch him hit and shake their heads. And you can just tell, not only that, obviously his distance is what gets a lot of people, but he's really sound around the greens in his approach game. Even though it's not, doesn't really pop the page, it's also not bad. It's very sound for a guy who hits the ball that far. And it's only 22 years old. This is a guy who, you hate to say it, you see three or four majors already in his future, but I can see him competing at, maybe not at Augusta, but a U.S. Open or British Open seems right up his alley already at age 22. So, man, it's the sky's limit for this kid. I'm with you. And this week, being in his backyard, I'm with you. Rahm is a guy who should be at least a top 20, just pencil it in. But keeping it going, the second guy in my lineup is J.B. Holmes, who really hasn't played much since the Ryder Cup, just three appearances since Hazeltine. And one of those was at the Hero World Challenge. He did make the cut at Torrey last week. Didn't really challenge, finish outside the top 30, although he did have a nice 68 on Sunday. However, sometimes you have to just throw the recent results out the window when a player has a special affinity for a course. I think that clearly fits Holmes here. He's won this tournament twice, which makes sense. He ranked sixth in stroke gained off the tee last year and seventh in par four birdies or better. The reason that matters is at a par 71 course, there's one less par five to take down, but the par four 17th is reachable for the likes of JB. I think kind of gives him a bump over the field. He's one of the handful of guys I can see capturing the title this week. Holmes just is a guy who, really, for how well he's played here, doesn't cost that much in daily fantasy leagues. So kind of as your medium or, you know, middle-tier pick, Holmes is the guy you got to circle.
Nice. And he's, of course, as we mentioned, a Masters of None member, our second-round pick. And I will go next with the guy who was picked number two overall in the draft, and that's Jordan Spieth. You know, we expected so much from him last year. Didn't have the same year that he had, obviously, in 2015 when he won the two majors, but who could ever keep that up? But now it looks like he's back on just an incredible pace. I think he's finished in the top six in four straight events. He comes to Phoenix where he finished T7 in his only appearance here. So, you know, this is a guy, it doesn't matter what the course is for Jordan Spieth. He's going to play well. He's going to play consistently, and he's going to be in the mix, at least with the way he's playing right now.
Yeah, he's one of the few guys who I think this TPC Scottsdale really fits the long hitters. I think Spieth is one of two or three guys who I think could still really score well despite not being a guy who hits it 310 yards every time. But yeah, I'm with you. Spieth's a guy who jumps off the page. Also kind of in that mix of guys who aren't the biggest hitters, Ryan Moore, who's finished in the top 20 the last four times he's played here, highlighted by a fourth place finish in 2013. We haven't really heard his name a lot in the early going, but that's mainly because he really hasn't played much. He did come in third at the Tournament of Champions, and his worst finish in just four events this year is a 23rd place finish. So, you know, we mentioned with J.B. Holmes how a player that fares well in the par fours, that really matters this week. I think the fact that Moore was 14th in par four scoring last year really bodes well. Things really get bet for a top 15 pick, despite not being a long hitter. Yeah, Moore's a guy you got to plug in.
Wow, Joel, we are on the same wavelength because Ryan Moore was going to be my next pick as well. And, you know, I saw some interesting stat at the end of the year, and it was world golf ranking points broken down by the second half of the year and then even the last 3 months of the year. And I believe Ryan Moore was number three over the last 3 months. So he really ended that year as one of the hottest players on the planet. Obviously, that's why he got picked at the last minute to be on the Ryder Cup team, and he ended up earning that the clinching point there at Hazeltine. So certainly he's coming off the most exciting season of his career, at least as a pro. Obviously, we know what he did as an amateur. And, yeah, you know, we haven't seen much of him so far, but no reason to think that he's not going to build on the success he had last year, get off to a great start this week.
I'm with you, yeah. And kind of rounding up that, you know, keeping the good things going is, there's another guy who it seems like we mentioned every other podcast, and that's Hideki Matsuyama. So because of that, you know, obviously I think our listeners are very akin to all the good things Matsuyama brings to the table. But if his unbelievable performance up to this point wasn't enough, the fact that he's not only the tournament reigning champion, but he finished second to Brooks Koepka in 2015 by one shot, that just shows you this is the guy who really loves playing here. Outside of Spieth and Thomas, he's one of the more expensive plays, but I think the juice is worth the squeeze. You got to have Hideki Matsuyama as one of your top guys to go this week.
Yeah, and he actually was the guy who was number one in the world ranking points over the last 3 months of the season last year. Nobody finished hotter than him, obviously. He had that one stretch where he won 4 out of 5 events. He's on an amazing run. Obviously, got into the top five in the world ranking. And, last year, I mean, I was so impressed when he took down Ricky Fowler. Obviously, a very pro-Fowler crowd out there in Phoenix. It looked like Ricky had that wrapped up, but Matsuyama hung in there, took him down in a playoff. Really an impressive win that, if he wasn't already on the map, he certainly got on the map last year. And, one thing we've neglected to say about this tournament is it usually does wrap up on the day of the Super Bowl. And sometimes it's in the same city as the Super Bowl, which makes for some interesting travel arrangements with some of the pros. But, Joel, I wonder, have you been thinking about the big game, and do you have a prediction?
I know our good friend Luke Carradine is not going to really appreciate this, but I just don't see how the Falcons are going to keep this close. I keep hearing how people are going to, you know, Falcons are a superior team. Do you really think Bill Belichick with 2 weeks can't figure out a way to take down Matt Ryan? No offense to Matty Ice, but, man, you look at all the peripheral stats and a lot of the luck factors or the luck stats, they say, really have favored the Falcons this year. Their defense is really a mess. That's something that's kind of been hidden under the rug. And as much as Tom Brady gets all the credit, New England gave up the fewest points in the NFL this year. So
it's amazing.
I just think this spells nothing but trouble. We've been very lucky lately to have close Super Bowls. Well, not last year, notwithstanding, but true. I think this is going to be a total blowout. I think it's like 31-13.
Wow.
Patriots.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I got to say, you're right with the point about New England's defense. Nobody talks about it. They're an incredible unit. You're right. Brady and the offense get all the credit. And even more amazing about the Patriots is that they've been doing this without Gronkowski the last few weeks. You know, I think if he were there, they'd be at least a touchdown favorite. I do think, though, that the Falcons are going to win. I just have a feeling, though, because the reason why I say that is, as good as New England's defense has been, I don't know if I've ever seen an offense this good as the way the Falcons are playing right now. I just feel like they're going to score every time they get the ball. And you said 30-something to 13. I can't imagine a scenario where the Falcons don't score 30 points in this game. Now, that's not saying the Patriots can't score 40 against that defense, but I definitely think it's going to be a shootout. And, man, I just have a feeling that the Falcons are going to keep it close and they're not going to win. I take it back. They're going to cover the four. They're going to cover the 4 points, though, but they will lose a close game, and we're all going to be disappointed to see Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and the Evil Empire hoist another trophy.
That's definitely not the Giants fan in you speaking out at all, is it? Although I was thinking the one of my favorite parts of this week is whatever reporter gets tasked with asking Phil a Super Bowl prediction, and then just being 20 minutes of silence as Mickelson then goes on a rant of what he thinks is going to happen. So
that's right.
Really looking forward to that Wednesday tradition.
That's right. All right, so I'll say New England 35, Atlanta 31. There we go. So, all right, both picked New England. I hope that's not the case, but they are mighty impressive. All right, Joel. Well, anyway, good to talk again. good to really get the season in full swing after that big event at Torrey Pines. We didn't even talk about Tiger Woods, which is amazing, but I'm sure we'll talk about him down the line. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Please subscribe to us on iTunes if you haven't done so already, and check back next week.